listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, Getting Infected with the Rage. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul here, going to come and preach as the Lord and Savior, Sir Nick, and we're going to talk about some 28 Days series here.
All of them, because we haven't actually touched any of these in the podcast before, and we may as well go over all of them at this point. The most recent couple, which may still be a trilogy at some point, 28 Years Later and 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple debuted last year, and both of them did middling box office. The second one was actually kind of a disappointment for Sony, but they're apparently still going straight ahead. Maybe DVD sales and licensing was enough for them to warrant a third one. I mean, Netflix did pick it up and started showing it, so they probably made some money off of that. But this is the four of maybe five of these 28 Days Later films that we've had so far, not counting the Sandra Bullock movie that is completely unrelated. And I like this series. I think I'm one of the weird ones of the whole fandom because I actually like all four of them. Even the weaker 28 Weeks Later, I think is a fun one. But I did find these two later films to be a little different and maybe not everyone's cup of tea for what they were expecting from this series.
I guess, like, if people were like that, I don't know what they expected. 28 years, like, a lot of shit's happened. Things are way different than they were. But, I mean, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought Ralph Fiennes did a great job in both movies. And, you know, we're going to talk about them. But it is different, you know. But society's collapsed at that point. So I think you got to, I don't know. If that disappointed people, I'm a little surprised.
Before we get into this, though, we want to take just a brief moment to thank our sponsors, InGen. Civilization has seen its ups and downs. For every major innovation, there's some massive danger that comes sweeping through. The rise of industry was met with wars and flus. The modern era saw a modern plague. So why not skip over the whole process and bring back the first great innovation? Dinosaurs. With InGen's patented technology, we can bring the great lizards of millions of years ago back today. Because what's going to happen? Another giant asteroid? Not on our watch. Thank you to InGen for sponsoring this video. 28 Days Later came out, like, God, so long ago.
2002.
24 years ago. So we're actually, the last two movies are actually 4 years ahead of where we're supposed to be right now. But
true.
Yeah. 24 years ago. And it was something of a oddity in the horror department. We really hadn't gotten fast zombies yet. And this was the first true, quote unquote, fast zombie movie, even though the things in the movies aren't zombies. They are rage-infected humans, which is what I rage about every time when I discuss these. So, these are some of the best speed zombies movies around. I'm like, no, they're not fast zombies. They're people. Zombies shouldn't be fast. And then fucking Zack Snyder came along and made a fast zombie movie with the Dawn of the Dead remake, and just the whole genre was fucked at that point.
Yeah.
I like 28 Days Later for what did that weird found footage, like shaky cam, very low budget, I almost said it myself, rage infected human movie, which was really good. I mean, it does play on the zombie tropes. It's still the thing. If you get bit, if you get blood, you're getting infected, you become one of the rage humans. It's zombies and all, but some basic biology. But that basic biology is important, as the end of the first movie and the start of the second movie indicate.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for $8 million, too, the first movie, I'm looking at that right now. Like, that's crazy. Like, crazy cheap compared to, like, what movies cost nowadays. And, you know, it made $82 million. So it was definitely, like, a sleeper kind of 10 times return on investment movie here. And this I remember, hit its stride when it hit, like, DVDs and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, when people started really seeing it, because it might not have been in a theater by you with only, you know, that kind of a budget and release. So I remember watching it on DVD at my buddy's house for the first time. And I was like, geez, this movie's wild. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And it does a really good job, like you said, with the rage humans and how the virus spreads. And you don't even need to be bitten. It just the blood needs to, like, just come into you. It's kind of all twisted and shit. Like, it's a little scary when you think about it too.
Yeah, so that one was great. It did a good job of being exactly what it was, a character study of four people trapped in the apocalypse a month after the apocalypse has basically quote-unquote wrapped up, and now they're just stuck in a city with zombies, not zombies, but zombies everywhere. And that was a really raw and focused movie. And then you move to the sequel that came out a couple years later, 28 Weeks Later, which posits that because these zombies started to starve, because they're basically just humans and they weren't eating because there's only so many people to eat, they were dying. And so the cleanup was doable. So a UN American run group came in, tried to clean up a portion of London, and started like having people live within the city again to rebuild. Because that's what you want to do. You want to rebuild. And the idea is that they'll slowly push out and clear more of the land. But when they let two kids in, the first two children to move back to the city, and the two kids are tied to a janitor who's their father, they wander off out of the protected zone, which they're not supposed to do, because they're children, and they find their rage-infected mother, who is not filled with the rage, but has the virus. And so they suddenly introduce the idea of carriers, which I think is a cool idea. And they also have, like, these kids and this plotline, and the kids need to be protected because, as eventually is revealed when the mom infects the dad, and the dad goes on a rage-killing spree, which has a fantastic eye-gouging scene that we can't show pictures of here on this podcast. at all! No, fantastic scene, one of the best scenes in that movie. The people have to protect the kids because one of the kids can actually be a carrier, and they may be able to make a cure based off of him. And so that becomes that movie. It's a different kind of, like, instead of just surviving the city, now it's like a mission to try and end the virus and protect these kids. And it had a different feel to it. Is it as good as the original? Maybe not, but it is a good film on its own right.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, it's a good story. It furthers what the first one kind of set up, because, like, it kind of tries to, like, bring you a conclusion to what happened or what's going on, like, half a year later kind of thing. You don't get some of the same characters that we had in the first one, and that's fine because it's a different story, but it did try to, like, not quite tie a bow around the story, because clearly we get more later, but definitely give you some kind of conclusion to what happened in the quote-unquote first outbreak kind of thing.
Yeah, it continues that story in a way that I think works, and it postulates an idea that maybe a cure can be found. At the same time, it also says that some of the zombies run across the channel to France and maybe infect over there, which I think is a plot point they basically ignore in the later two films.
It seems that way, yeah. I think in the later two films, they're kind of consolidated to the British Isles kind of thing, or at the very least, not enough made it over to infect the mainland kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you think, like, okay, so they don't say the second movie didn't happen in the third, but they just mostly pretend that whatever happened there doesn't have any bearing because it's now, you know, 28 years later.
Yeah, that existed in a vacuum. We'll move on to something new.
City's infected. City's still infected. Whatever.
Yeah, you're staying away from the city and a zombie outbreak anyway. It's the absolute worst place to be.
It is. No, what you should do is you should find yourself an Amazon or other similar seller's warehouse. Go get yourself a couple of metal baseball bats and a machete, and then pick up a bunch of supplies and maybe a gun for the other humans, and then go and find somewhere to hole up and hide.
Yeah, like, you know, very few of you. You don't need to rebuild where you are. Just go and get away for a while and don't draw attention.
Yeah, the more attention, the more people you have, the more that you do, as we see in these later films, the more likely you are to be attacked by other humans.
Yeah, because that's who's most dangerous at this point.
So we then get into 28 years later, which we're now going to do a much more lengthy discussion of, because these two films tie together as, like, one continuous storyline with, hopefully, a third story coming at the end. And we're basically introduced to Spike, who is a 12-year-old? I think he's 12.
He's about 12, yeah.
He's a 12-year-old who lives in an island community off the northern coast of Britain. And this is one of the small protected places where the zombies can't go, because they basically have a shallow land bridge that for most of the day is washed out by high tide. So they can cross during low tide at the two times of day when that's available, and the rest of the time they're protected from the rage-infected humans that are still running amok on the mainland. So exactly, Spike, along with his dad, who's played by Aaron Taylor-Johnson, is learning how to be a hunter so he can go out and gather supplies to bring back to the island. And while they're out there, they run across one of the, they're basically like a master zombie, if you want to put it that way. A giant zombie, rage-infected human, who brings other rage-infected humans around him. And he sends his zombies after them, and they all have to run back to the island. And but then, Spike also learns about a doctor who has his own weird satanic thing going on. That's all we really learn about him for the first half of the movie. Off in the middle of the mainland, And Spike's mother is dying of something. We're not sure what. Right. Played by Jodie Comer, she is just dying. So Spike decides to hustle her out of the town when no one's looking, and then take her to this doctor to see if he can, like, save her somehow. And that's how we get Ralph Fiennes' doctor, who runs a place of peace for those that are dying that he calls the Bone Temple. And it's weird, because it goes from this, like, zombies movie to something much more contemplative and strange.
And they kind of touch on that a little bit too in the second one, which we'll review, but it gives you like perspective on like, you know, where you are now kind of thing. Like, you know, who you were in your past life doesn't kind of really matter anymore. It's what you do with it now. And this is how he has chosen to kind of live out his life and everything. And it's a whole dynamic of trying to survive versus not really giving a shit if you do kind of thing.
It's almost like he's decided that humanity is fucked. So, yeah. Like, don't worry about this life. Whoever he comes across that's dead or dying, like, he kills the rage-infected humans, adds them to his collection. He bleaches the bones, boils off all the flesh, makes sure that they're basically pieces of his temple, and that he places their skulls in places of prominence so that they can see the future and find their afterlife or something. It's his way of helping people, quote-unquote, move on.
Right.
But if a human comes to him and is dying, he ushers them into his bone temple as well. Like, spoilers, Spike's mom. And then the rest of the time it's just rage-infected humans that he's taken out and putting there because there's no cure that he knows of at the time for it. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's weird because it starts off as a very zombies kind of movie, and like two acts of it are very rage-infected and heavy and horror. And then it's just like, oh, and then there's the Bone Temple, and let's meditate on this for a little while.
Yeah, let's inject some humanity and provocativeness into the movie about, you know, death and eye gouging. So, but I think Ralph Fiennes' character is really good.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We get quite a bit more of him, obviously, in the second one, which is much fresher in my mind because I just finished watching it, which is why we're talking about these. But I think that Spike he comes off as me as a kid that's just trying to learn what the hell is going on. He doesn't know what's wrong with his mom. He doesn't want to kill anything. Gets pissed off at his dad because his dad's like, yeah, he did this great thing, and he's like, shut up kind of thing. So he's not quite an angsty little shit, but he definitely, like, the kids are always the problems in these movies.
Well, and this island raises them in a different way from how their parents, who were on mainland and in civilization, were raised. They don't understand the world that was. They only have this world, so their whole perspective is warped in ways that I think the movie is trying to get at. Like, you've had 28 years. What is the next generation going to be like now? And it's very different. So Spike is coming into this just not understanding what cancer is, not knowing why his mom is dying, not really thinking about, like, the world in the way of, like, civilization or so forth, which is contrasted when a UN soldier lands on the island, and he's from Finland or Switzerland or
something. Norway or something, Sweden, yeah.
One of those Norse countries. Yeah. And he has, like, a cell phone that just quickly runs out of battery. He has a girlfriend that apparently he's now broken up with. He doesn't have this weird warped sensibility. He just knows that the island is full of zombies and they were supposed to fight them, but now he's trapped there. So his perspective is different from Spike's, even though he's not that much older than Spike. And so it's like contrasting how these different civilizations are now going because of this apocalypse that landed.
Yeah, and the different, you know, perspectives on people based off of where they live, like, you know, this guy's a military kitted out, kind of supposed to be really survivable in these kind of situations, trained for this kind of shit. And the other people, they got sticks and stones, literally. So,
yeah. So it's weird because the first movie is very much especially with the ending, like the very, very, very first movie is like with the ending at the military base when the humans are the bad guys. That one's like, that's a horror movie, but it's showing that the worst things in the world can be is the humans. And then the second movie doesn't care about that idea at all. It's just like, zombies bad, run from them, which, sure, that's fine. I don't mind a good chase movie. It was pretty fun for what it was. This one is weirder. Because it wants you to be scared of the zombies, but then it wants you to find peace. And I think it's that ending that feels a little off and a little strange. And then it's that ending that directly feeds into the sequel. 28 years later, the Bone Temple is even more contemplative. And the zombies are almost not the danger at all anymore.
There are not many of them either in the movie. You know, there's a few good rage-infested scenes and everything like that, but, like, the real focus is the humans in this, which, you know, at the end of the day, you know, rage-infested running zombies are kind of scary, but the humans who can put things together and strategize and you know, move in packs too and can coordinate are definitely the real threat, especially when they're sadistic sons of bitches.
Yeah. So at the very, very tail end, in, like, an almost post-credits scene, Spike runs into a pack of Jimmies, and it's a bunch of bad people, all like teenagers, early 20s, somewhere around there, who are led by Sir Jimmy Crystal, a guy who was basically a child when the plague hit, and his dad, who was a pastor, functionally believed that the cleansing of Earth was a good thing, and the zombies were sent by God or something. And this totally warped Jimmy, who up to that point basically was just a dumb little child who watched Teletubbies all day long. So he has this warped sensibility. He believes that he is the son of Satan, whether or not he truly believes this, he believes it, quote unquote. He has brought all these other kids that he's named Jimmy with him, and he's got them to believe that he's the son of Satan. And then they tell stories about the Teletubbies, which is really fucking, like, a really weird cult thing to do. And then they go around, and when they find humans, they kill them. So they attack a scavenging pack, and then they follow the scavenging pack, and they attack the scavenging pack at their farm, and do some really fucked up things to them. All the horror in this movie comes from the Jimmies.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, they're believable to me as, like, you know, a kind of like a ragtag group of misfits kind of things, but, like, they've survived for quite a long time with what seems like a really just kind of, I don't even understand, way of going about things. Like, you're not in one place, you keep moving, so that's why you've survived for so long. I get it, but that's a fucked up pack right there, man. There's some really twisted people in there.
Yeah, they're not interested in survival. They're interested in killing as many people as they can to send people on to Satan to sacrifices. And if that means wiping the whole of humanity from the island of Great Britain, then, oh darn, that's what they're gonna do.
Shucks, oh well.
Snap. Yeah, no, it is funny. Also raises an amusing point when you think about it, that, you know, all of Great Britain is infected, all the way up through Scotland, Wales, England, all taken out. Ireland doing just fine.
Yeah, hanging in there. We're our own little island.
Oh, little island, you're good. Peace out, bro. No, I just had that realization. But it is the Jimmies that are the danger, which is contrasted by our good doctor, played by Ralph Fiennes, who shows up again, and he basically has the whole sometimes A plot, sometimes B plot of the movie. And basically, he finds this one giant master zombie that he names Samson, which, I mean, if you guys don't like a lot of full frontal nudity, don't watch this movie, because...
I was a little surprised.
Yeah, the zombies do not wear clothing, and Samson just lets it all hang out there.
Yeah.
He basically gets Samson high on a mix of medicine and heroin to pacify him.
Essentially, yeah.
And then he starts having conversations with Samson while Samson is tripping balls on heroin. And over time, he starts to try and think about, could he find a way to cure Samson? Because he's basically humanized Samson without Samson showing any regard for it. But he thinks, you know, the plague is affecting their brains, but there's got to be a humanity in there somewhere. So he tries to find a cure. And basically what he does is he comes up with a way to suppress the anger, use a little heroin, and also put in some antipsychotics. And the movie, spoiler for a movie that's been out for a year at this point, shows that he actually can, at least temporarily, cure Samson, which is interesting.
It's definitely very interesting, and it kind of brings it back to the story in the second one, the asymptomatic carriers or something. You know, maybe he could be brought back and he can be used to do something to help people. You don't really know if he gains his humanity back, but he definitely gains a little bit of something.
At least for a few days, he's not the fully out of control alpha rage guy that he was before. Maybe in the third movie we see him show up and he is or he isn't. We don't know yet. The third one is in pre-production and may or may not start filming at some point. But it is interesting to see humanity devolve while at the same time the Doctor is basically trying to take the rage zombies and revolve them back.
Yeah, it's a good tie-in with the Jimmies, you know, looking for their Lord Satan. Like, he... Ralph Fiennes is almost like a god, but doesn't have a god complex. So it's kind of funny that they run into each other, and it works for the story, because that whole Iron Maiden scene at the end of it was a lot of fun with the pyrotechnics and everything. That was a really interesting scene.
Yeah, they think that he's Satan, so he pretends to be Satan so that they don't kill him, and it leads to some crossfire, functionally. But,
essentially, yeah.
Like, really, when you think about it, the alphas bring the lesser zombies to them and have a pack. Jimmy mm-hmm. is an alpha. He's brought mm-hmm. his lesser Jimmies to him and runs a pack, and they're basically killing and brutalizing just as much as the rage-infected humans do. So it's like, mm-hmm. it's a path of, like, one civilization crumbles and the other maybe can re-inherit. It's almost like, in a way, Day of the Dead, the original version with Bub, where Bub is, like, given some form of civilization, he's no longer a real zombie anymore. It's weird how these movies do this sometimes, but I liked it here. I liked this movie, I think, actually better than 28 years later, because the contemplative ending on the first one felt tacked on, but here, this is the theme of the movie.
It is, and, you know, you get the ending, you get the fan salivating again, bringing back Cillian Murphy at the end of it, you know, with his daughter and all, and, you know, the one girl in it, like, I don't even know what the hell her name was, the one who was with the party that the Jimmys killed, she just fucks off, and I don't even know where she went. So maybe we run into her again at some point. I don't know.
It's thing. If this is a pre-planned trilogy and you raise these characters, then you expect those quote-unquote rifles over the fireplace to fire in the third act, which would be the third movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the fourth movie didn't do as well as the third, and mm-hmm. both of them were disappointments in comparison to the first two. But it's weird because I actually think of them, like, the fourth movie maybe the strongest since the first. It's a very focused story.
I would agree with that. And mm-hmm. I thought the action was good. It's the humanity part too. Like, you know, what the Jimmys do to the survivors, and then Samson literally just ripping the guy's spine out like Predator or whatever. Like, you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, I guess, but like, the man is very strong.
He's like 7 feet tall and all rage muscle. I could kind of see it.
I mean, it's impressive to rip someone's spine out through their, you know, eye sockets. But
like a bowling ball. It's fine. You just ripped a bowling ball. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
You see him in the next scene, just like, you know, he's got like the skull and he's eating little fingers of flesh. I'm like, oh man, this is what a life, man. And then he's eating a blueberry at one point.
I mean,
or a blackberry.
It's an R-rated zombie movie. At least they went there, you know? Yeah.
True. And the practical effects in the movie were very good as well. Prosthetics and all for some of the rage infected people were good. The whole bodies that got mutilated, like, you know, they look kind of nasty. It was a good movie overall with what it had. So I hope that we get a continuation and a fifth one that kind of ties the whole story together, which it feels like they were setting up. And
they were
almost disappointing if we don't get that.
Like we have that tag ending, and that feels like it's necessary for it. And like, if we didn't have the tag ending at the end, bringing in Cillian Murphy and showing that there's a connection to the first film where his character is from, then I probably wouldn't care so much. Like, this ties up the plot lines well enough that we don't need another one. But because of that tag ending, now I need another one. Now I need to know what happens next to finish out the trilogy and presumably get Spike back to his island with all of these ideas and adventures that he's had to tell people what civilization is like now.
Yeah, we'll see. It'd be interesting, because you almost forget that Spike came from somewhere in this movie.
So yeah, I like this series. I think this is a very successful, very consistent series, all things considered. It has its highs and lows, but by and large, the movies are very strong and well thought out.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It's a strong subsection of the zombie genre that does a good job for what it is. It's not, you know, Walking Dead slow zombie. It's not George R. Romero's, you know, sulking zombies at the end. It's its own kind of thing, and it does it very well.
Mm-hmm. As long as it sticks to it and no one else tries to copy it.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's so far so good.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, going on newsgroups and yelling about rage-infected humans. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike Gould, gonna go and pray to Sword Lord Jimmy Crystal and get some dinner while he's at it.
Some spine-rippingly good dinner. We will see you all next time.